In this episode, recorded during the 16th Parlamerica's Plenary Assembly, Achim Steiner, administrator of the UNDP, outlined some ways that parliaments can help propel the much-needed positive transformation of societies to accelerate progress towards the Sustainable Development Goals.
I'm sure many of you would not be here today if basically you are convinced of the relevance, and I therefore do not want to preach to the converted, but I would like to just take one step back for a moment and reflect on why the Sustainable Development Goals and this Agenda 2030 is so relevant to our times. You have already heard this morning a number of remarks about the challenges that nations, our societies and communities across Latin America and the Caribbean face right now. These are not normal times. These are times in which economies are facing challenges, but to understand this moment simply through the lens of economics would be deeply mistaken. Because quite a number of countries across the world that are facing political challenges right now within their countries and societies are not necessarily the countries with either the lowest growth rates in GDP or the poorest countries in the world if you measure per capita GDP. No, it is sometimes nations that have some of the highest GDP growth that have been successful in actually growing their economies but are facing internal challenges that have much to do with how a nation understands itself. And we already heard this morning whether it is young people, whether it is the differentiation in gender terms between men and women, whether it is the concerns of the indigenous peoples within a nation state. There are many ways through which to understand these tensions as much more than something purely economic. Inequality is multidimensional. It is not just financial. And herein lies one of the big lessons that I want to begin with of why in the year 2015, through an extraordinary process of global consensus building, probably unprecedented in terms of the shortage of time and the outcome, we arrived at the 2030 Agenda and the Sustainable Development Goals. They bore both the scars and the lessons of the financial crisis in 2008. They were empowered by a summit in Rio de Janeiro that looked at the future from the perspective that we really have to come to a point where we understand that as nation states coming together under the umbrella of the United Nations, we are bound by history and by what is happening around us to also work together as one international community. So there are the lessons that led in a number of countries to almost an economic meltdown and then turned also into a conversation between Main Street and Wall Street. That was the New York metaphor. But in, I'm sure, every one of your countries, there are two streets that would summarize that same dilemma in exactly the same way. Inequality has emerged as one of the most corrosive forces in the ability of a nation state to succeed, not only as an economy, but as a successful society. Alongside that, sustainability. Senator, you have been, and you also as Member of Parliament, have been at the forefront of trying to articulate that climate change is not simply about something happening in our atmosphere. It is a consequence of what happened in the biosphere, here on the ground, in our world in which we take decisions every day. And as a consequence of those decisions over hundreds of years, we now are faced with a time window of less than 30 years to fundamentally rethink our economies. Now, to some, this is a doomsday scenario. I would urge you to look at it, yes, in terms of the time challenge, as an enormous challenge to each one of our countries, but as an opportunity to reinvent our economies in the 21st century, to become more independent of fossil fuels, to decarbonize our economies, is actually not a doomsday scenario at all. As Sir, or rather Lord Nicholas Stern, as he is now known, described it as the growth story of the 21st century. So we are at a remarkable moment where sustainability alongside equity and inequality have become fundamental drivers of change, but change that, yes, demands disruption, but above all creates opportunities. In fact, we are here in the Congress in Asunción in Paraguay, a country that has already made a significant step towards reducing its emissions footprint, and not at the expense of national development. In fact, it has created new opportunities. I just arrived from Berlin, OECD, industrialized country. In the year 2019, Germany has now managed to produce in the first three quarters of this year, 43% of its electricity from renewables. This is one of the largest industrialized countries, where 10 years ago this scenario was described as the lights going out, competitiveness being lost, and German economic players in industries such as the automotive industry moving away. Germany has the highest budget surpluses at the moment, the lowest unemployment rate, a healthy economy. So clearly, the energy transition, which in Germany meant switching off, first of all, nuclear and now phasing out coal, has done everything but harm the economy. In fact, it has propelled the economy, just like in Denmark, just like in the UK, just like in many other countries where we are now seeing the same development, a new era of progress. I begin with these very concrete examples because when we look at the 2030 agenda, it is both a way in which we can trigger enormous innovation and transformation, but we should always be conscious that this is not a singular unidimensional issue. Part of what the Sustainable Development Goals represent is the lessons, sometimes painful lessons, of 60 years of post-war development thinking, in which we always thought that there would be one silver bullet that would lift us to the next level. And some countries sometimes came close to finding those. But here we are at the beginning of the 21st century. And ladies and gentlemen, these silver bullets don't really exist. And when one country takes a shortcut, it now comes at the expense of everyone else. And that was a second reason why the 2030 agenda was so uniquely and important in terms of its timing. Universality, the principle, alongside an integrated approach that I just alluded to, is the second major design principle. The SDGs, the 2030 agenda, essentially says no country can really address in isolation the great challenges that we now face, be they environmental, be they in terms of the global economy, be they in terms of inequality, in terms of pandemics, in terms of cybersecurity, just to mention a few examples. We are bound to work together, and so the Sustainable Development Goals are essentially saying that every country has its part to play, because if it doesn't, it comes at the expense of everyone else. Now, we may say this is very philosophical. It's actually the most radical and profound change in an international cooperation paradigm that we have seen since the United Nations was first created. And it is articulated in terms of 17 goals, indicators, targets, which to some extent try to answer to the challenge that so many often say. The United Nations is very good at declaring great goals, but they don't really mean very much because you can't measure them and everybody talks about them. So this time, hundreds of indicators and targets were formulated. Now, to some extent, they are the product of technocrats trying to fit reality into a very ambitious new vision for the future. But, ladies and gentlemen, do not be distracted so much by the indicators and targets. Look at the goals, look at the principle of universality, look at the principle of an integrated approach, and recognize that this is actually an agenda that for the first time unites us in the way that we look at development in the 21st century together. And it is also, and this is very critical, not just a numbers game and a kind of mechanical measurement of progress, because the third vital, almost underlying principle of success that the 2030 agenda articulated was something that sounds almost like it could be out of a party manifesto. Leave no one behind. Now, in these few words lies the most powerful lesson of history, of the history of development, failures and successes. And also, I remind you again of the moment in 2008, 2009, when the world came close to having an economic meltdown. We live in a strange world where our financial system is entirely divorced sometimes from where our economic and social systems seem to find themselves, because many of you may have forgotten or not. It took less than 26 months for Wall Street and for the Dow Jones Index to reach the same levels as before the financial crisis, while most of our nations were still borrowing hundreds of millions, billions or trillions of dollars, if you add it up, to bail out a financial crisis that was still unfolding. And therein lies perhaps one of the important realities that are also playing out in many countries in your region right now. Inequality is not just something that you measure in per capita GDP or income. Inequality has something to do with a fundamental sense of fairness, a confidence in those who lead our nations, parliaments, governments, leaders in the corporate world, in our communities, mayors, to be able to offer an answer to what otherwise becomes an increasingly disconcerting scenario. And whether we talk about this in terms of migration, in terms of protests, in terms of electoral defeats, this is the full spectrum of politics, but it is how people express themselves in our societies. I do not need to tell you this because you are at the forefront of this expression of public will. And so let me say that when we talk about the SDGs in the year 2020, we can first of all look back to the year 2015 with some fascination at how it was possible that as diverse a nation as the Bahamas, just to pick one country that has been at the forefront of the consequences of inaction, for example, of climate change, with the future trajectory of Brazil, of China, of Denmark, or of the United States. It is a remarkable moment in 2015, and I tell you why it happened. Not because we all suddenly started thinking as one big family, because when we looked at the next 20 to 50 years, we saw suddenly that the risks that lie ahead of us are in fact the 17 risks that we then described and turned around into 17 goals. Because the SDGs, taken and turned on their head, are the risk map of the 21st century. And interestingly enough, and I think that is one reason why they have become so rapidly embraced across the world, is that they actually are relevant to every single country, whether you're a small island developing state, whether you're a dominant OECD economy, an emerging economy, or a country such as Paraguay. Working with these 17 goals is a way of managing both the risks, but as goals, also designing development responses that are likely to be more resilient, sustainable, and successful. And herein lies, I think, the unique role that you as parliamentarians also play. Not only are you the place where policy becomes law, not only are you the place where the executive becomes accountable to the legislative and through you to the people of the country, and in the case of the SDGs, please remember, all your executives, your presidents, your prime ministers, the governments of your country endorsed the SDGs and accepted that they would take them into their national development process. So it is only legitimate that the citizens, not the United Nations, not the General Assembly, not the Secretary General or the President of the General Assembly, but your own citizens, through your parliament, ask the question of your government, how are you implementing the commitment that we have made as a country when we signed up to the SDGs? So accountability becomes a critical function of parliament. And by having a public conversation every year, I would suggest, on progress or lack of progress, it is the citizens that become empowered through you to be part of that conversation. Why annually? Because there is also an annual budget process. I think parliaments are critical in reminding governments and the executive that often constructs a budget, yes, from a political perspective, but also sectorally, sector by sector, that the SDGs demand more than simply lining up a series of sectoral budgets. It's a different way of looking at development and development investments, and therefore lawmaking, budget approval, the accountability, the reporting on progress becomes an extraordinarily important part of making the SDGs not something that you write a so-called voluntary national review that you present in New York maybe every 3 to 4 years. No, the SDGs become the backbone of a conversation between the government, in the larger sense, and its citizens about the future of development in our country. That is why I want to also thank very much Parlamericas for the partnership, indeed for preparing this report. Thank you also for referring to it. It is an excellent step in making that role of parliament that is so vital, so central, and so comprehensive in this approach, an integral part of making the SDGs not something that belongs to the General Assembly, is made in New York, is something global and abstract. This is the DNA of development that, translated into the domestic context, becomes the foundation for a compact between citizens and government, between the public and the private sector, between federal government and local government. Because this is another part where I appeal to you to hopefully accelerate the way in which the SDGs can become part of the way that subnational authorities and mayors and municipalities can begin to address some of the fundamental challenges that we face. Because the closer you come to where people take decisions, the more real the so-called trade-offs may become, or the more practical the choices we can make to not trade off one person's well-being against another person's well-being because of the way we can plan development. And frankly speaking, it is also an extraordinarily powerful tool for engaging everyone beyond government. One of the great surprises of the SDGs since they were adopted in October or September 2015 is that private sector actors, whether they're entrepreneurs in the financial sector, in the industrial sector, in the services sector, have shown an extraordinary interest in working with these sustainable development goals. I have never seen any other agenda that has emerged out of our multilateral United Nations system being embraced so quickly and so proactively as these SDGs. There are important messages in here, and I don't have the time to go into that today, but I would urge you to view this also as a way of looking at how the private sector can align itself with delivering public goods and the kinds of outcomes we talk about here without having to create this dichotomy between public sector and private sector, privatization or not privatization. This is not an agenda about how you privatize the economy. This is an agenda for how the private sector, that in most countries represents 3/4 or 4/5 of economic activity, can align itself with solutions that will contribute to more stable, sustainable, and economically successful societies. Let me end, if I may, by just saying that in the United Nations family as a whole, but particularly in the United Nations Development Programme, and I expect many of you have seen this also in your countries, this approach to looking at the SDGs as an integral part of governance, governance across the executive, the legislative, the judiciary, but also in the way we engage the economy and citizens, is at the core of what we do. It's the DNA of UNDP. It's at the heart of what we believe we can contribute to helping countries, be it through the economic lens, be it through the societal lens, be it through the environmental and sustainability lens, to conceive of a strategy that best captures the opportunities of the future of development in the 21st century. This is a time of profound transformation. Not managed properly, not conceived in the right way, not being inclusive enough, is a recipe for disaster. Switch on the evening news and you can see every day today the price we pay for either complacency, ignorance, or perhaps not an appreciation of how many things we must bring together in order to succeed in the 21st century. It is a time of transformation, a time of extraordinary opportunity, but also a time in which we need to work together across national boundaries, across sectors, and hopefully, as part of the United Nations offer to you as parliamentarians, also as the international community in solidarity with you, particularly as parliamentarians. I know that we often see governments being led by presidents and prime ministers and the so-called executive. But what makes government most successful is when parliaments are active, actively engaged, and are guiding a philosophy that comes closer to where citizens actually believe their nation needs to be. In that spirit, I wish you a very successful meeting here in Asunción and in all the work that you do, and I hope that wherever you may be, you will find a UNDP colleague close to you with whom we can continue to work together on this wonderful project that is actually born out of a longer-term partnership that we already have with the IPU since 2015, and that has taken us into 60 parliaments around the world to promote the SDGs. Muchísimas gracias.